You're listening to Work in Progress. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation. Work in Progress explores the rapidly changing workplace through conversations with innovators, educators, and decision-makers, people with solutions to today's workforce challenges.
Pre-pandemic, the number of Black-owned businesses was on the rise, with Black women leading the way despite facing major challenges, including a shocking lack of access to capital. While the average startup in the U.S. raised about $5 million in capital, female-owned Black startups raised just about $30,000 and received just about 1% of the venture capital funding available. Shelley Bell, the founder of Black Girls Ventures, is on a mission to help Black and brown women find alternate means of funding. Shelley, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. This is exciting.
Shelley, I'm a big believer in the idea that for most of us, our pathway to who we are today is never a straight one. Reading about how you got to this moment as a business strategist, a serial entrepreneur, and in your own words, a venture catalyst for other women of color, I'm inspired by your story, by your history. Could you share that journey with our listeners?
Thank you so much. And it's awesome. I'm honored to hear that. I usually start this story at I was engaged to a man who did not want me to start a business. He didn't understand that. He's like, start a business? Nah, that's not going to be stable enough. And so I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to be a wife. Like, I should probably not do that because I guess wives compromise. And that wasn't usually my thing. I had gotten laid off prior to making this decision and decided to go back into the workforce doing some work in patent searching. And so prior to this, I'm a computer scientist in training. I've always been entrepreneurial. I worked for the Patent and Trademark Office for a while. I taught children in K-12 education, computer science, and had worked in workforce development. You know, by this time, I'm like, okay, but I'm about, you know, we have a family that we're starting. Let me go get a job. So I go and I think I'm faking it every day, but I wasn't clearly. So my boss comes in and he's like, you're amazing, but this job is not for you. And so he laid me off. He gave me a really great package, but I was devastated. I went home and I called California Psychics and I was like, what is happening to my life right now? And the woman, she told me, when you find the thing that you want to do, the money will come and you're not going to be with that guy. And so within 2 months, my entire life flipped upside down. My fiance and I broke off the engagement. I threw everything out of my living room, repainted. I don't know. I guess I just needed new scenery. And I was like, okay, I'm going to start a business. And so I just started thinking of like, well, what would I want to do? And one of the first things I came up with was a teepee. And so I said, I'm going to build a teepee, put it in my living room, and I'm going to rent it out. And everybody thinks I'm crazy, literally. Like, so many people are like, what? You gonna do what? I'm gonna build a teepee, put it in my living room, and rent it out. And sure enough, I built this teepee, and it worked. Airbnb has a teepee option. I had a lot of people who wanted to come and stay in this teepee. And after letting one person come stay, I quickly realized that I don't want people sleeping in my living room in a teepee. And so I'm like, well, what else can I do with this thing? So, and this is before the kid teepees hit the market. And right now, there's still no like adult teepees or not a lot of tutorials on how to build them. So I plan on bringing it back someday. I needed to make money. And so I needed to make a decision. And so I started thinking, what other skills do I have? Landed on a t-shirt line. The first one was the LGBT line and the design sucked. Nobody bought it. And so I was talking to the printer I was working with at the time. And I said, you know what? It's made by a Black woman. I should put that on a shirt. I created the Made by a Black Woman logo. It's a pattern after the Made in America logo. Put it on a shirt. Everybody loved it. And my mom invested some capital. I used my tax money to buy machines so that I can own the manufacturing process. And I printed a bunch of shirts. And I was like, here we go. I'm on my way, right? I go to my first event. I let one of my friends hype me up like, oh, you're going to sell out. And we get there and we do not sell out. We break even. And I'm devastated again. But my mom was like, well, at least from here on out, it's all profit. So we started vending all up and down the East Coast. Anywhere that I could go, I would keep a batch of shirts and a table and some chairs in my trunk. I'm like, we're going to be able to vend anywhere at any time and just be ready to sell this product. I learned a lot about interfacing with customers. I learned a lot about materials, chemicals, manufacturing processes, speeding it up, slowing it down, where things needed to be, customer service. So much in this one whole year, by the way. I mean, I started a business that year prior, but all I feel like all of the fast-paced learnings and movement came in that 1 year. One of my mentors said, hey, don't change your design. So I didn't change the design. I changed what I put it on. We put it on baby bodysuits. And then, bam, it took off. People were like, oh, I'm black. My baby's black. Made by a black woman. And I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's not what I meant, but you run with it.
That's a great piece of advice. It's a great marketing idea.
Yeah. You know, when your product takes a life of its own because people start interpreting it and positively, right? So it wasn't a bad thing for them to think. So I'm like, sure, go with that. You know, well, what angle can I now strategize around to be able to market it in that way, right? And so interestingly enough, around like the conversations that are happening right now in today's climate, that running with that idea, and I don't think I've talked about this very openly, but also caused us to run into some things about identity. Like how do people, if you were a person that was mixed, you know, were you made by a black, like it became a very interesting conversation I actually don't talk about often. And just because it's just coming to mind, not because I want to leave it out, but it was interesting to have those conversations.
What kind of business challenges did you face a year into your company to try to expand it?
Yeah, that's such a great question. I would say making the money and living off of the money was a big challenge. I did have some infusion of capital because my mom gave me some of her retirement money and because I used my tax money. But when it came to like making the money, I was making the money, but I could barely put the money back into the business for having to actually live off of the money. And that's a different kind of, I didn't find a lot of people like me talking about that openly. And then even when it came to like curriculums or like, you know, going into a class and learning or like watching classes online, nobody was talking about that. Nobody was talking about the fact that I had to make the money and live off of it at the same time. For whatever reason, there's this idea out about business that the people who get into business have all of this capacity and leeway before they can think about making the money, such that they have time to write out a 20-page business plan, or they have time to sit through a 13-week all-day class, or, you know, they have time to think about like, well, let me put a whole financial sheet together. You're just trying to map out what you can in the moment to make sense for how you can make more money. Where I was really able to level up was doing business with corporations. So supply diversity was huge for me. And Google is a company that I work with. They actually pay their, if you're in a supply diversity program, you get paid out in 15 days. So another challenge would be the procurement process. I would have to be able to front 2,000 shirts for a company or even a government entity, and then wait to get paid for 30, 60, 90 days. And it's just not, that just wasn't feasible for me. So I found myself having to go B to C a lot more than I wanted to. And then finally landed in doing some orders for Amazon and some orders for Google, where through networking and social capital, built those relationships and were able to get connected to people who were working on events and needed things almost immediately, such that I didn't have to wait every time a 60 to 90 day cycle.
To be able to cover that 60 to 90 day cycle, you know, a lot of small business will reach out and try to get a loan, or they'll try to get other investors in. So is that experience that you have had, is that what made you start Black Girl Ventures so you could help other people understand this?
100%. So I would say part of the reason I started Black Girl Ventures is because I realized that when you're in business, there's not a readily available, down-to-earth, fun community to join. So there's communities to join, but there weren't always the down-to-earth, fun ones. Even the tech communities that are fun, they're somewhat pretentious. They're like, are we friends? Are we not friends, right? So, and I was doing performance poetry and just am a natural storyteller. So when you're doing poetry, you can go to an open mic any night, especially in DC pre-COVID, because Bus Boys and Poets is having open mics all week, basically. So you can go out, you can get on stage, you can do your poem, people will clap for you. But that wasn't the case in entrepreneurship. So I was like, hey, okay, Black women are not getting access to capital. I thrive better when I have a community. Boom, let's just do this thing. And it was really, let's just all get together, put some money together and then give it away to the people who are pitching. I ran the first event like a poetry slam. It was, you get 3 minutes to pitch and the audience will actually give you Q&A. I cooked all the food myself. It was a brunch. There 30 women showed up, 4 women pitched their business. I gave the money away. I didn't even really think a whole lot about it, except that people liked it. And so I was like, okay, well, let's keep doing it. And just natural business acumen, started looking for our different partners, partnering with spaces. We started doing it at WeWork. From there, we just started to steamroll and get bigger and bigger. In 2018, we landed a partnership with Google, and that really allowed us to scale around the country. So then we started going to different offices, Chicago, Atlanta, D.C., New York, Detroit, Baltimore, Austin, because we would do South by Southwest, just doing this crowdfunding Kickstarter meets Shark Tank kind of model, where the audience actually goes into their own pockets and donate to the founders that they like the best.
What's happening now with that kind of, you said you did it virtually at South by Southwest this year?
So this year we went virtual for South by Southwest. It went really well, actually. So at the latter part of last year, not knowing it that COVID was going to hit, but so timely that I built out a tech product to handle the voting and the donating. So all this time, we're doing a lot of it very manually, which was hard because every time you wanted to donate or vote for a person, you have to give check all the way out. Then come back if you wanted to vote or donate for someone else, you have to check all the way out. So I'm like, we got to make this easier, such that people can actually vote with their dollars much more easy and check out all at once. And so the tech product that I built out is called SheRaise. So it's SheRaise.com, SHERAISE. And it is a pitch competition management system that allows donors, or allows people to pitch, and then you can vote with your dollars. So we shifted it to completely virtual, because usually it would be that people are on stage and then you're donating. They're pitching, and then you get to vote in a moment. And now we're doing it where they can put their profiles up, they can put their videos up, and then you can vote with your dollars that way.
Are you able through this to connect businesses with the venture capitalists that we talked about earlier in the conversation, or is it still more crowdfunding, more one-on-one funding?
So yes, so it was a way to scale up funding. So for it started with everybody getting just the winner or the top person getting capital. And then once we went to the vote with your dollars, everybody in the competition can get capital. Even though we still consider the people who have the most donors to win, all 8 people who are pitching now get access to some levels of capital. So my theory around like generational wealth is that there has not been enough time that Black people have been able to gather wealth uninterrupted. So when we think about like the people looking at like, oh, the solution is we need to dump more capital in. And like, that's true. And the thought that there's only been about 60 years, maybe 70 at most, that Black people have been able to gain access to capital just through working or starting businesses without it being blown up, means that it's hard to fare up against a 150-year investment banking arm or a 100-year firm. So my thought is, where is the wormhole? How can I cut time in half, right? Which means that how can I get more funding to more people in a more simple way? Because I do believe that along your business journey, and I learned this, is that you need infusions of capital, financial capital. You need a lot of social capital, and you need to be able to go learn and do, then come back and get more infusions of capital. And that infusion of capital could be a range. My theory is about $10,000 could get you started, depending on what you're looking at and what you're working on, about $10,000. Once you're launched, of course, you're going to need to go and get more. But if you have like doubled down on what your business model is, and you have a product especially, and you have a really tight fit with the market and the product, you should be able to take that $10,000 and flip it at least into another 15 to 20, such that you'd be able to keep moving. But you will need consistent infusions of capital until you have reached a mark that your product takes off and scales itself.
Are you seeking out the companies that are taking part in these pitches, or are they finding you?
A little bit of both. So we do market for people to apply. So there's an application process. You have to be at least 1 year in business. You have to be generating some revenue. We don't do idea phase for the competition. you can be a part of our community if you're in IDFAs, but we want to fund people who are off the ground in their thought process and what they're working on. So you have to be generating some revenue and have raised under $1 million. So people are typically finding us because they're searching for capital, and we're on a lot of lists and things. So if you're like searching like access to capital for Black women, we're liable to pop up. And then we also are recruiting. We talk to people in communities. We work through our change agents, which are our chapter leads, to find people. So we want to find the best and brightest. So we do a little bit of reaching out, and then people reach out to us too.
Do you do any funding yourself, or is this all as the connector?
I have done some funding myself in a more passionately crowdfunded equity kind of way. Not necessarily as an accredited investor now.
Okay. Is there anything different now in the last few months since COVID, since the protests in the streets and, you know, not just the United States, but around the world? Is there a more focus on the economic inequities and business startups?
So I think, yes, I think it was, I think the focus was always there. I think there's like now eyes on it that weren't before. So I think like there's something there. There's a moment for us to maximize, you know, like the work. There's hundreds of organizations that are maybe not necessarily doing the work the way I'm doing in terms of like capital, but they're doing the work. They're doing the education. They're on the ground. They're ecosystem builders who are building local ecosystems to be able to support Black and brown entrepreneurs. So and entrepreneurs of color. So I think that the work was always there. Right now, there's a lot of eyes on and people reaching out to help do the work. It's like the country shifted to focus on it, while prior to now, there was always an underlining group of people focusing on it. You know, it's one of those things where people say, I don't know if you ever heard this before, but I've heard people say like, oh, well, nobody's focusing on Black crime. So why are people focusing on police brutality or white on Black crime? And I'm like, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. There are people focusing on Black crime every day. There's organizations always focused on peace that are hyper-local to these communities that are actively working. And it's so disrespectful and such a disregard for people to say nobody's working on Black crime. That's just not true.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Are there any success stories that you would love to tell us about? Do you have any success stories to share with us through Black Girl Ventures?
Absolutely. Kai Frazier, she is an entrepreneur out in Oakland who is, she creates VR experiences so that children can go on field trips, which is amazing. And I met Kai prior to, I was contracted by the K-4 Center to put on a BGV style pitch competition for them, and met Kai through that experience. She hadn't pitched before, and I worked with her, pitch coached her. She was talking so fast. She's an amazing spirit and being. I love her as a person. And as a founder, she's amazing as well. And so you know, I'm coaching her. I'm like, okay, slow down. Let's hype up your story. Tell us more about why you chose to do this. So she did. She won some money through that K-4 Center competition, and she kept moving. And so she's destined to keep moving anyway. I'm just glad to be a part of that story. So as she keeps moving, I'm like, okay, wow, would you come and be a part of our South by Southwest competition? So she came and she pitched as a part of our South by Southwest competition, which was funded by Bumble. This was last year. When she pitched, the entire audience clapped for like 30 seconds. Like we immediately knew she won. It was hands down. Oh my God. And her story is around like growing up and understanding what it meant to not have access to field trips. So after that, now here we are. She kept going. I keep in touch with her often. I keep in touch with a lot of a lot of our community often. We keep in touch with alumni after they come through. But with Kai, she kept going. She got into Techstars, rock star there. And more recently, we actually had an opportunity to pitch her for the Bumble Fund to actually look at. So she's on a couple of radars. She's closing around right now. And I've been working with her just pushing out to different people that I know to try to get them to actually invest. And so it's been interesting to watch her journey just be so full have conversations with her about the things she's learning about growing a team. Also looking at like going from VR to XR, which makes the VR experience more available for people. The things that she's learned and just checking in with her. I mean, we have dozens of stories like that. People who come through, it's their first time pitching, their first time, sometimes their first time winning and stay in the game because they're like, if Black Girl Ventures exists, then I know I can keep pushing. I know there's somebody that will connect me to whoever they can connect me to get me to the next level. So it's been an amazing experience. Even with our South by Southwest, some other founders that came through the 2019 South by Southwest recently had some conversations with some investors who are now having deeper conversations with them literally over the course of these next 2 weeks. So it's been amazing to watch them move through this experience.
Are you going to change anything? Anything that you're doing? I mean, you've obviously already successfully moved virtually and you were in the process even before COVID. But is it changing anything that you're planning ahead for Black Girl Ventures, how you help women entrepreneurs?
I think we'll remain a hybrid of like in-person and virtual. Virtual, interestingly enough, it's been a huge blessing for us. I'm actually able to serve more people a little more effectively, I think, because we're not so bogged down to space and gathering and having to put our marketing efforts into getting people to just gather in one place in one city. So in response to COVID, we launched a online incubator and we also deliver 3 pieces of content a week. So on Tuesdays, we have partner-led content. We've partnered with Google, Bumble, Cool House, which is an amazing ice cream brand. And other partners that we're working through right now, where they will deliver content or sponsor us to deliver content to our audience on Tuesdays. That runs the gamut of accounting, you know, other financial pieces, business development and growth, marketing and branding, speaking opportunities, telling your story. On Wednesdays, we have virtual co-working all day. That is for people, our peer mentoring, getting business referrals, working together, starting other projects. Right now, at least 2 or 3 women and I in the co-working space alone, and this is usually about 35 women or so per Wednesday, they are doing business together. They are mentoring each other, helping each other, working with each other. It's you know, doing webinars together. It's amazing to watch. And at night on Wednesdays, we do pitch practice. So helping women speak more fluently about their business and what they're working on, whether you're pitching just, you know, in conversation to a customer, if you're pitching to a corporation because you want to do corporate business, or if you're pitching in a pitch competition, how do you speak more fluently about your business? On Thursdays, we have community-led content. So people from the community that want to share their expertise, that's when they are doing webinars. So yeah, and then we also have the BGV Talk series where I'm interviewing, it's talk show style. I'm interviewing prominent people in their industry. So I interviewed Alicia Wilson, who is an amazing person. And she is a VP of Economic Development at Johns Hopkins Medical System and University. I interview Gary Vee. I interview Vanessa Simmons. So I think, you know, it's been amazing to see what we can do when we're virtual because we can move so much faster. And I'm a techie. So, you know, this, you know, being virtual is right up my alley.
I've really enjoyed this conversation. I'd like to ask one last thing of you. What would you say to a young woman or a woman of any age? She could actually, entrepreneurs, the average age for a new startup, the person is 40 years old. What would you say to someone thinking about starting their own business now? What piece of advice would you give them?
If you're starting a business now, focus on customers. We have so much... We have people's attention right now, just in general, like people's attention is online. So focus on your customers. Another thing is, you know, with that, revenue is the validator, not your sister, cousin, brother, friend, aunt's uncle who used to do a thing one day or never ran a business. People who have never run a business, you know, take that advice with a grain of salt. Revenue is the validator, not someone else's opinion of your business, not even a bank that denied you a loan. That's also not a validator of what your business can do and where it can go. So focus on revenue, focus on customer relationships, focus on building relationships.
Thank you very much. I've been speaking to Shelley Bell, the founder of Black Girl Ventures. This is Ramona Schindelheim. I'm editor-in-chief of Working Nation. My producer is Larry Buell. Our executive producers are Joan Lynch and Melissa Panzer. Thank you for listening.